Welcome to The Morning Magazine for Monday, February 7th of 2022. I'm your host, Ellie Stuckrath. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, students in the Douglas County School District are calling for a walkout this morning to protest actions by the school board, including the recent firing of the district's longtime superintendent. We look at staffing shortages at schools across Colorado and how COVID-19 relief funds could provide a one-time cash infusion. And we'll have the latest installment in our fossil fuel transition series. This time, we'll hear about how solar gardens are providing renewable energy for mobile homes in Boulder. At the bottom of the hour, we'll hear the BBC headlines and then the Hightower Lowdown, followed by a public affair. Host Frank Dubofsky's guest this month is Boulder County District Attorney Michael Darty. And as always on Monday morning, it's Counterspin at 9 a.m., a look at fairness and accuracy in reporting. Then at 9:30, Doug Gertner will be in the Denver studio to bring you 2.5 hours of eclectic music with the Morning Sound Alternative. All that is still ahead this morning, but first, a look at local and regional headlines with KGNU's Jamie Sudler.
Chemicals that have been linked to health problems, including cancer, have been used in fracking of Colorado oil and gas wells. A new report from the organization Physicians for Social Responsibility concludes that PFAS compounds, also known as forever chemicals, were used in almost 300 drilling sites and possibly at many more in the past 10 years. They were also used in other processes to extract more oil after the initial fracking, according to the report. An earlier report by the organization revealed that PFAS chemicals were used in fracking in 6 other states, among them Texas, Wyoming, New Mexico, and Oklahoma. According to the Denver Post, a spokesperson for the organization said last week that while the amount of chemicals used in fracking is small, some are so toxic that even small amounts can contaminate drinking water and can make people sick if they are exposed. PFAS compounds have been used globally for many decades in products such as firefighting foam, waterproofing clothes and home furnishings, and food packaging. They are very hard to break down because of strong carbon bonds that last for a long time. A representative of the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission said in an email to the newspaper that the agency is taking a serious look at how this emerging issue may relate to oil and gas operations. Yesterday in Douglas County, protesters against the recent firing of school superintendent Corey Wise came together to express their support of him and teachers. In a contentious meeting Friday night, a newly elected conservative majority of the Douglas County School Board voted 4-3 to terminate Wise in a sharply divided special meeting. The move was taken after a week of controversy, including a protest by students and then teachers, which forced the cancellation of classes on Thursday. Nine News reports that yesterday's protesters said the board is no longer looking out for the interests of teachers or their students. A student walkout may be planned for later today. We'll have more on the Douglas County controversy after headlines. A librarian in Colorado has filed a complaint that she was fired by a Weld County Library District because she objected to the cancellation of LGBTQ and anti-racism programs she had planned. According to the Denver Post, Brookie Parks worked at the Erie Community Library branch and believes she was terminated based on her advocacy for youth of color and young LGBTQ people. She filed her claim with the State Civil Rights Division and the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. She was terminated by the High Plains Library District in December in what was a move to discourage, quote, inflammatory or polarizing programming. The district has 7 branches, including 2 in Greeley. The Aurora Police Chief has fired an officer who mocked diversity efforts by his own department. Denverite reports that Chief Vanessa Wilson terminated Douglas Wilkinson's employment after an independent investigation showed that he violated the city's anti-harassment policy and its directive on discrimination. Wilkinson sent an email to more than 200 police department employees last November calling diversity initiatives sexist and racist towards white men. Wilkinson had been at one time the head of the Aurora Police Association, one of the union's representing officers. His email was critical of efforts that were agreed to by Aurora and the Colorado Attorney General's Office to improve use of force policies and conduct training on racial biases and hire police officers and firefighters to more accurately reflect Aurora's racial and ethnic makeup. As early as this week, Boulder County authorities are expected to award a contract for the removal of debris from private property after the Marshall Fire destroyed more than 1,000 homes in December. The Denver Post reports that two companies who are bidding have warned officials that the county could jeopardize millions of dollars in reimbursements from the federal government, and errors in oversight could result in taxpayers paying the bill. In addition to those warnings, the Post spoke with Michael Brown, the former director of the Federal Emergency Management Authority under President George W. Bush. He said that he's concerned about how the county is going about hiring a contractor. Brown is known for his handling or mishandling of the Hurricane Katrina disaster in New Orleans in 2005. However, Ben Perlman, the Boulder County attorney, said it intends to do everything the right way so those in Louisville, Superior, and unincorporated parts of the county can rebuild their lives. The commissioners could take action on the contract at tomorrow's meeting. The project might cost more than $100 million, of which 75% is usually reimbursed by the federal government. Both of Colorado's senators and Representative Joe Neguse, Democrat of Lafayette, have asked the federal government to pay the full amount of the contract. Colorado Parks and Wildlife is warning of mountain lion activity near Boulder. The agency said in a letter that there have been five sightings of the felines on 15th through 17th Streets and Iris through Orchard Avenues. CPW advises not to approach a lion, to stay calm if you come upon one, and stop or slowly back away if you can do so safely. The weather forecast for the next few days looks to be about the same. Sunny or mostly sunny skies with daytime highs in the low 50s or upper 40s, and overnight lows in the low 30s or upper 20s. And no precipitation is in the forecast. Right now it's about 31 in Boulder, 29 in Denver, and 18 in Fort Collins. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Some students at Douglas County Schools are calling for a walkout this morning to protest recent actions by the school board, including the firing of the district's longtime superintendent. The termination came at the end of a long and contentious school board meeting Friday. To catch us up on what's happening, CityCast Denver host Bree Davies sat down with Colorado Newsline reporter Chase Woodruff, who has been following the story.
Chase, can you explain what is going on in Douglas County right now?
So on Friday night, in a kind of tense and hours-long board meeting, the Douglas County School Board voted 4-3 to fire its superintendent.
I'm obviously a very emphatic no. I knew this would be a 4-3 vote when we started this evening, and I knew we were going to lose a superintendent who will always hold a place in the Hall of Fame as one of our most beloved leaders.
And this all kind of cropped up really over the course of a week. The minority on the school boards, they had kind of raised the alarm about, you know, what they sort of described as an illegal plot to oust the superintendent in violation of Colorado open meetings laws and some of the district's own personnel policies. And they raised the alarm. They said the conservative majority on the school board is moving forward with firing the superintendent to go in a different direction. And then on Friday night, it all came to pass.
And what you're doing tonight is horrific. I've never seen anything in our district like it, including those years, several years ago, that we always refer to as the Dark Ages. You have just activated the Dark Ages for this district. So congratulations. My vote is a no.
And in really pretty chaotic and dramatic fashion, this vote to fire Corey Wise happened again on a 4-3 vote.
Measure is passed 4-3. And audience, please do not react.
Let's go back to the beginning, because this particular segment of the drama happened over just a week, which is not a lot of time. But this is a longer, bigger picture conversation about Douglas County, in particular the school district. So where do you think this story really started?
So, I mean, one place to start is the Douglas County School Board has kind of flipped back and forth between sort of a more conservative, pro-reform majority and a more progressive sort of teachers union-backed majority. It's flipped a couple times in recent elections. The most recent time was just a few months ago.
Most school board races went to candidates backed by teachers unions. In Douglas County, however, four conservative candidates will flip the makeup of the board and have declared victory.
They had campaigned on a lot of what they called parent choice, which was opposition to mask mandates was a big part of it. And sort of in general, sort of opposition to COVID protocols at schools and closures and whatnot. Also a big undercurrent of a big current of opposition to what they called critical race theory influence in terms of some of the curricula in DCSD, and in particular an equity policy that was passed by the previous board in March 2021.
Let's dig in a little deeper on that equity policy, because we covered it on the show last year, and I know you've reported on the debate around critical race theory. Where do you see the connections here?
Yeah, so I think, you know, when it comes to Douglas County, it has been interesting to see sort of these four new conservative board members, how they talk about it has kind of differed depending on the venue and at what stage in this process is. I think, on the campaign trail last year, you heard them giving a lot of, you know, interviews with Fox News and really kind of crusading against, you know, identifying critical race theory as an influence in this equity policy and in DCSD more broadly, and talking about adult ideologies infecting the classroom and personal politics. And I think I'm not sure that the words critical race theory have been, you know, uttered by these board members in recent school board meetings. They have kind of modulated their opposition to this policy in a lot of ways. And in fact, they passed a resolution at the end of January, sort of clearing the way for changes to be made. They are pretty adamant that this is not a repeal of the equity policy. They just want to see it reflect some more, you know, principles that they have laid out. Some of the language they use is that the equity policy is too focused on, quote, group identities, and they want to see more, as they put it, emphasis on individuals as opposed to what they call group identities.
So what happened at the beginning of last week that really sparked this situation?
The effort to fire Superintendent Wise was revealed kind of somewhat dramatically in a public meeting held last Monday night.
President Peterson informed me that he had met with, along with Christy Williams, that morning with Superintendent Wise, and had given him the option to resign or let him know that the board would be moving forward with termination.
David Ray, who's one of the school board members, he described it as an unauthorized ultimatum, which involved two of the conservative members going to Superintendent Wise and essentially saying, you know, you can resign by the middle of next week, or we're going to begin the process of termination.
And that clearly upset a lot of people in Douglas County, including students, parents, and 1,500 teachers who called in sick on Thursday in protest. And many of them were on the streets outside of the district's headquarters. And I know that you spoke to a couple of them. What did you see and hear out there?
Yeah, I mean, I saw an awful lot of people. I saw it was difficult to park down in Castle Rock and kind of trudge, everybody trudging their way through the lots of snow and 20 degree temperatures towards DCSD headquarters in Castle Rock. And yeah, for a few hours, folks rallied out there. Lots of teachers, lots of parents, lots of students showing. Mostly, I think the message was at that point a lot of support for Superintendent Corey Wise and opposition to getting rid of him, as transpired a day later. And, you know, especially as we talked about kind of the seesawing back and forth between these conservative and progressive majorities, they talk about, you know, not wanting to go backwards. And they feel like the district has been going in the right direction over the last 4 years in terms of those things, and don't want to see things go in a different direction, as, you know, with the firing of Superintendent Wise, you know, appears to be the case.
And that's kind of how we ended up with this Friday night school district meeting that was like live stream that people were watching and live tweeting.
Yep. So, you know, as the meeting began, I think that the liberal members did. They expressed appreciation. You know, thank you for calling this and doing it in a public setting. And I think that's what they wanted all along. And it was a bit of a chaotic scene from there.
Just to bring it back, this is, I appreciate Becky, but this is not a debate over is Becky nice or not. I know she is.
Wasn't my question.
I might ask for a motion on unanimous consent that Becky is a good person and is trying.
Get out of here.
But we are getting.
What did you see in watching this that maybe seemed atypical for a school board meeting?
Well, you know, I mean, in watching it, it was hard not to think back to, I think that one of the big campaign ads that the Kids First Committee, who elected these, that was the slate that elected these four conservative members, they put out a campaign ad ahead of the election last year, and its title was Bring Boring Back to School Board Meetings.
Bring back boring to school board meetings.
We have seen a lot of chaos in the boardroom from frustrated parents who have lost trust in the board.
The lack of stable leadership and 3 superintendents in 4 years does not reflect stability.
But not all is lost. With true leaders on the board,
we will go the distance to reestablish trust in the school board again.
Help us rebuild trust and bring back boring to the boardroom.
So it was, I think there are a lot of adjectives you could use to describe Friday night's meeting. I don't think boring would be one of them, and I don't think it really lacked chaos. So it was quite something.
The responsibility of the 7 of us is to determine the best leadership. And with all due respect, if you can come up with nothing better than what happened before you were elected, the problem with leadership is the 4 of you.
Yeah, I would also like a direction. I like the redirection, but I would like the question answer. Who directed this? Did you direct the superintendent? You're voting no for termination.
I'm sorry, yes.
Mike, that was her vote. You do not get to come in and coerce her into changing her vote. And if she cannot follow what is happening, it is not your responsibility to bring her up to speed. Her vote is no.
I am confirming her vote.
In the end, who do you think really is coming out ahead here? Or whose interests do you think this situation really serves?
Certainly in this matter of the superintendent's future, the conservative majority won in this instance. I would say, I think it's fair to say that they struggled to articulate a clear reason in this meeting and a clear rationale for exactly why they wanted to let Superintendent Wise go. They fired him without cause, which is an important, you know, technicality. And, you know, I think they felt like they wanted to go in a different direction. And they felt, I think, you know, President Mike Peterson, who is one of the new members, said that he had lost trust in Superintendent Wise and didn't feel like he was the person to sort of carry out this new board's vision. And you know, now Superintendent Wise is gone, and there will be presumably a new superintendent at some point. And, you know, that will be up to the conservative majority to select that person and have their sort of vision for the district carried out over the next several years.
Well, Chase Woodruff, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
You just heard an excerpt from CityCast Denver, the local Denver daily news podcast. Learn more about subscribing to the podcast at denver.citycast.fm or wherever you get your podcasts.
KGNU will have more on the controversy in Douglas County on tonight's Labor Exchange at 6 p.m. Many school districts across Colorado are struggling with labor shortages, from teachers to cafeteria workers. The extent of staffing shortages in public K-12 schools in Colorado and across the nation is the focus of a new study from the Economic Policy Institute. The report's recommendations include tapping billions in unspent federal COVID relief funds to raise pay and make other workforce investments. Eric Galatis has more.
As school districts across Colorado struggle to keep their doors open because of staffing shortages, a new Economic Policy Institute report suggests that states should tap billions in unspent COVID relief funds to make long overdue investments in the education workforce. David Cooper, the report's author, says raising pay will be essential for bringing back and keeping high-quality teachers and support staff.
Pay in public schools is quite low, particularly for support staff, folks like bus drivers, custodial workers, food service workers, the staff who are essential to schools operating and providing safe, healthy learning environments.
Public school bus drivers and teaching assistants earn roughly $500 per week, while food service workers earn just $331. Colorado lost nearly 15% of its bus drivers between 2019 and 2021, and nearly 7% of its teachers, a number which the report warns could put student achievement and the long-term success of schools at significant risk. Cooper admits that if lawmakers do use COVID relief dollars for education, it would amount to a one-time investment and not cover ongoing costs, including increased salaries. But he says the public health emergency has made it very clear that the economy cannot function if schools aren't open.
If people don't have a place to send their children so that they can go to work where they know those kids are going to be safe and learning something, the rest of the economy is not going to work. So we have to spend whatever it takes to make sure that schools can operate effectively, or we're just shooting ourselves in the foot.
The current loss of K-12 workers comes on the heels of even bigger losses after the Great Recession that were never fully restored. Cooper says this moment of crisis for the country's schools could mark a turning point if public officials are willing to get the ball rolling with billions in unspent relief funds.
But the truth is, most states have been reducing their expenditures in public education on a per capita basis for a long time. So this may be the nudge that lawmakers need to start generating new revenues to support education for the long term.
This is Eric Galatis reporting for the Colorado News Connection.
In an effort to provide access to solar energy for mobile home residents, the city of Boulder came up with a unique solution, a solar garden. KGN News' Rosanna Longo-Better reports for Rocky Mountain Community Radio as part of our collaborative series on transitioning away from fossil fuels.
We are Boulder as a community. We are walking and see the new things that we have here in Ponderosa, like the streets, new lights.
Ponderosa is one of the five mobile home parks in the city of Boulder. In 2019, the city purchased the park to maintain affordable housing and to improve park infrastructure. One of the projects the city took on was creating access to solar energy for the residents.
A lot of things, a lot of changes that we have having in Ponderosa.
Carlos Valdez, who has lived in Ponderosa for 9 years, says his energy bill is now lower.
During the summer, I was paying like $80, $90, and now I'm paying $40, $35. It was my lowest bill.
Ponderosa residents getting the solar energy save on average more than $400 on their electricity bills each year. Low-income communities typically pay higher energy costs as the homes are often not well insulated and are less energy efficient. Caroline Elam, Energy Systems Senior Manager for the City of Boulder, said in addition, mobile home residents have historically been excluded from accessing solar energy because the panels don't fit on the home.
They can't support solar panels on their roof. They're not structural. There's other limitations. And so we really wanted to figure out how to come up with a solution that benefited everybody in the community.
The city came up with the idea of a solar garden located outside of the park.
So one of the benefits of what we have as a city organization is we own a lot of land and structures. And so several years ago, we did an analysis. We hired a company to look at where all the potential was on things that the city itself owned. So whether that was buildings like an airport or our municipal buildings or land. And this particular garden, we found a location for it. It's adjacent to the Boulder Reservoir at the north end of Boulder. And one of the benefits of solar gardens is they don't have to be located exactly where the customers are, the people who are getting the benefits of it. So we can take advantage of places that are have that space to install the system.
Elam says the funding for the project comes from a completely different industry.
It's funds we actually collect as part of our marijuana cultivation licensing process, coincidentally, but they're required to offset their energy. We reinvest that in the community, so we had some funding available, and we were able to make that investment. And we started looking at different ways we could bring solar.
The first resident to allow the city to install the solar system is Kathy Slurth.
Yeah, I ended up being the first person who actually got hooked up. It didn't start till, I think it was July last year when it physically was going to be turned on. But it was a couple months before the glitches all got worked out. And so my first bill was an $80 savings. But it's averaged out so far to about $37 a month. And we were told that the city was going to up how much solar energy we could have. And so we were told at some point that our bill should be at least paid half of our bill, which would really be nice. And it was kind of nice too that the way it worked out. So it was actually hooked up before we had to start using our furnaces to help balance the extra bill added on from, you know, now having the heat our homes for the winter.
The Ponderosa Solar Garden is the first city-owned garden in the country that is dedicated to low-income participants. The city is looking at other solar garden projects to expand access to renewable energy to other low-income communities, renters, and those who live in multifamily buildings. For KGNU, I am Rosana Longobeter.
And that's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Ellie Stuckrath. Stay tuned for a commentary from Jim Hightower, and then it's a public affair hosted by Frank Dubofsky.